TSN's golf analyst Bob Weeks joins us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, Bob?
I am indeed watching it while talking to you. So if I yell or jump up or scream or something like that, you'll know what's going on.
It was incredible when I was watching the Golf Channel at 7 this morning. So that's 6 o'clock where this is being played. They came on the air. It's completely dark and the stands are full. You've been to some Ryder Cups in the past. Can you just set a scene for everybody, United States or Europe, wherever it's held, how big an event this is, just to be on the grounds?
Well, it's a massive event in terms of infrastructure, you know, stands and all these kind of things that you see around the golf course. It's probably the most emotional, fan-fueled kind of event that you've ever seen. It's also probably the worst event as a spectator you can go to try to watch some golf, because there's only 4 matches on the golf course at any one time, and you got 40,000 people all trying to get a view. So it's a tough one to actually watch. You're probably much better watching at home if you actually want to see the golf. But it's the most fun event. It has crossed the line a number of times, I would say, in my experience, more in the U.S. side than in the European side, but both can take part of the blame. And it's fun. It's just fun. It's, as you mentioned, it's the drama, it's the tension. It comes down to the last bits, and it's the first time for these golfers. It's the only time of the year they really get to play as a team, you know, and that's a different feeling for them, and they get pumped up a lot of it because of what the crowd's doing. So it's a different event, but it sure is fun to watch.
Bobby, if you were to poll the Canadians on the PGA Tour, who are they cheering for?
It's funny. I ran into a couple yesterday by circumstance. Taylor Pendrith was having his bachelor party, but they were playing golf. Surprise, surprise! And I asked a couple of the guys, and they said Europe, but they thought they were kind of like Switzerland. You know, they weren't really going to stand out and say, "This is who I want to win." They sort of said, "Well, it should be a good game," but I think they were suggesting that perhaps the U.S. team might be a little more powerful.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll break down the two teams in just a second, but I want to ask about the venue as well, because, I mean, we see, Pebble Beach when the tournament is held there, various tournaments or whatever. There's some incredible vistas at certain venues. The way this is at Whistling Straits, right on the shores of Lake Michigan, I mean, it's just the television coverage is absolutely incredible. Can you tell us, though, what that course in particular is like and what it will be like hosting an event like this, the Ryder Cup?
Well, it's a bit of a beast. I've been to 3 PGA championships there. It's long. It's a hard walk, I will say that. And that's something to consider when some of these guys are going to be asked to play 36 a day, and a couple of them might be asked to play all 5 rounds. It's one of those courses, obviously, being right on Lake Michigan, where the wind is going to play a huge effect. And the wind can switch around a little bit, so you really have to kind of keep a sharp eye on the direction of the wind. I'm sure that the U.S. team will try to set up the golf course to favor their strengths, which is generally length off the tee. So you might see a couple of good drivable par fours in play. And then they've got these crazy bunkers all over the place. We all remember what happened to Dustin Johnson, who didn't think he was in a bunker and grounded his club and was in a penalty, got a penalty and lost a chance to go into a playoff at the PGA Championship. These bunkers are everywhere. I would say about 60 to 70% of them are not in play, but visually it's very deceiving a little bit. I think they can kind of trick your eye a bit. So it's like a links golf course, but it doesn't play like a links golf course. You've really got to fly everything to the hole. So that's what these players are up against.
When you say links, I kind of think that would favor the Europeans. Does the course favor either side, and is that part of the selection, or is it, hey, let's just find a great track for the boys?
Yeah, the latter part is the first choice. They just say, let's get a good golf course and let's get a golf facility. You know, there's a business side to this as well, so let's get a golf course where we can make some money on it, which is probably number one. This is a very important financial event for the European Tour, which doesn't have as many resources as the PGA Tour would have, or the PGA of America, actually, which runs this. But once they have the course selected, I think the setup is usually the home team's advantage. We saw that in Paris 3 years ago when the European team set the course up that would favor their side. And now Steve Stricker has set this up, or will set it up, I think, to favor the longer hitters like Bryson DeChambeau and guys like that. So there's a real science behind the course and how they play it and how they set it up.
TSN golf analyst Bob Weeks is our guest. Bob, this is the first time since 1995 neither Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson is playing on the American side. They have really turned it over. It's a much younger team than it typically would be. So young is fine in golf, but can mean inexperience as well in something as big as the Ryder Cup. How do you think the American team will react to the so-called pressure of the Ryder Cup?
I think they'll, you know, it's always interesting to say we got rookies. They got six first-timers on here, but you know, you've got Colin Morikawa, who just won the Open Championship, and you got Xander Schauffele, who's a rookie, who just won the Olympic gold medal. So it's not like these guys don't know how to play or don't know how to you know, react in big moments. But I think what you're seeing now is kind of a changing of the guard, changing of the nucleus of the American team, and that's a good thing. I think for a lot of times the American guys were a little bit individual, a little bit too individual. There's still some tension in that team room, no doubt, between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau and maybe a couple of others. But I think what you're seeing now is a more cohesive unit, and some of these guys can really play. And once they get over the first tee jitters, and trust me, they had first tee jitters, all of them will, and even the veterans will, I think it's just going to be playing golf, and I think all the guys who are rookies are experienced enough to do that pretty well.
Yeah, golf is, as we all know, is an individual game. For you know, they've all played in formats like this growing up and playing a team golf, as it were, but it's not familiar to them. For some guys, do they really struggle with the concept of I can't let my partner down? It's one thing to let yourself down by having a bad shot, but it's even more so when you feel like you're letting someone else down.
Definitely, that's the biggest thing to try and overcome, especially in foursomes. There's, we know it as alternate shot. You know, you hit a bad shot and you leave your partner in a terrible position, and you just feel horrible about it. And we've seen a few of those already this morning, if people have been watching. But that's something you sort of have to overcome. And the guys who can overcome that are the ones who are generally pretty successful at it. There's also, you know, the whole dynamic of who are you going to pair people together with, and which the captains have to kind of put together. And you want to make sure you get guys whose games mesh. There's a real science to it. Both teams are using analytics to see which players would match up better. Even something as simple as which golf ball do you play? That's one of the toughest things for Bryson DeChambeau. He plays a golf ball that nobody else plays. And for him to use a different kind of golf ball can be very limiting. It sounds very unusual, but it might be a reason why he's not out there this morning in foursomes. He probably will be this afternoon when he can just play his own ball for 18 holes.
JR brought that up in the first hour, Bob, and I guess I'll just ask, like, how does that work behind the scenes with what golf ball you play individually or as a team?
So, there are, you know, partnerships that the captains will sort of test out. They'll say, okay, we want this guy, player A and player B. If they both use different golf balls, then the two players will decide, okay, well, let's use this one. It's the most common one. And the other player will go out and practice with it and try and figure it out. It's things like spin. It's things like trajectory that these golf balls react to. So something that they're just not used to seeing in a lot of cases. And that's a lot of it. But there does have to be some one side, generally speaking, unless they play the same golf ball, one player will have to adjust somewhat and come over to the other guy's side.
Based on world rankings and everything, the U.S. Should be favored in this, but Europe has found a way for the most part to be the dominant side in this, especially in the last 20 to 25 years or so. Why do you think that is?
I think the European Tour players have more to gain and less to lose than the American guys. You know, they are sort of almost always the proverbial underdog. They come in here not expecting to beat the big, powerful U.S. I think for the most part, they've been able to play more like a team, more cohesive as a unit than the Americans have. I think that's changing a little bit, and it's a bit of a generalization. But there are 12 guys in the European team room who I can pretty much assure you are all pals, are all on the same wavelength. You know, they're not the best of friends. Sergio Garcia and John Rahm are not not that they don't like each other, but they're not great buddies for some reason, and it's just who they are. The American side is generally sort of 12 individuals who they try to put together, although there are some friendships out there for sure. But it's just that, I think, is really what drives it. I think the Europeans just have a little bit more will sometimes to win than the Americans do. But as we talked about, you know, the nucleus of this team is changing, the younger players, and I think a lot more of them have played together in the past, whether it be college or in their early days on professional golf, and so that might be less of a factor as we move ahead to the next few Ryder Cups.
Bob, would you also say it's just that much easier for the Europeans to rally together to play the disliked Americans, where it's kind of hard at times to dislike the Europeans?
Yeah, you're right. There is something to that for sure. As I said, you know, there's a little bit of tension in that team room already. We know with Brooks and Bryson. So, but I think people like to cheer for an underdog, and that's generally what the European team is.
Give us the sense of being on the ground, how performing in front of fans at a Ryder Cup is different than performing in the final round of a major.
I think that the players, first of all, feel a little bit more tension, and the crowd enhances that. The crowd makes that bigger and makes it louder. And I think, you know, when you are playing an away game, if you have never experienced that before, as these Europeans are doing right now, it can be tough. And listen, the fans can really go overboard. The last time I went to the Ryder Cup in Hazeltine, it was, you know, it got really kind of nasty on certain cases with some really bad calling. Now, that might be commonplace when you're at a hockey game or a football game, but it's just not something that these guys are used to. And so I think it can be very distracting for the players. It's a little bit of a new experience, so they have to kind of adjust to that, but you can also use it to your advantage. It can pump you up, and I think we remember, or you may have seen highlights of Patrick Reed and Rory McIlroy's match, which was just sensational, with the two of them going back and forth and getting the crowd involved in it, getting the crowd to try and react to it, and I think that's what makes this event so fun, is that the crowd really is does play a big part of it.
And as does, we see a lot of scenes, Bob, where it becomes also the family. I'm going to guess that if a player doesn't like, they don't like each other, the girlfriends and wives don't like each other, that dynamic must be incredible now, bringing them all together and trying to get them to rally.
Yeah, it is. You know, there are some unusual situations too, because don't forget, these guys basically all play on the PGA Tour. And, you know, a lot of them are friends, even though they're playing on different teams right now. They could be close friends. And so you have that kind of weird dynamic of you know, maybe your this wife and that wife socialize together for 51 weeks a year, but this week they're on different sides. Same thing with some of the caddies. You know, you've got American caddies on the European side and the other way as well. So it's for 1 week a year, everything changes just a little bit.
All right, good stuff. Well, we're underway, all four matches on course. Early leads in a couple of them for the Americans, but still a long way to go. And as we see, lots can change in the course of just a couple of holes. It's just a tremendous theater, though. Bob, appreciate the time and the insight. Back to the easy chair now, and enjoy the rest of the Ryder Cup.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good morning, everybody.
You too. There's Bob Weeks.